I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 435.
It took 435 episodes, but we started right at 9 o'clock tonight.
Wait, are you sure it's streaming and it's pushed all the right locations? Before you get a little too cocky or sure of that.
I'm seeing all the destinations started. I see all the correct naming. The chat
wow.
is working.
Wow.
435.
What a strong close to 2022.
That's right. We're, you know.
Right there.
You can't finish strong, end strong.
Yes, that's...
Or start strong, finish, end.
I don't know, something. So tonight, as our last episode of 2022 is here, we'll again talk a little bit about some more of the sponsorship conversations that have been running amok all over the internet. Lots of people, we mainly have been seeing our top level, mid level, low level, all different players talking about where they're not playing for in 2023 and beyond. And I think they're holding a lot of that information tight to their chest.
Another
week. We're going to see some things come next week. Things will be ablaze in terms of lots of people talking about their new sponsorships for 2023 when we get to next week. But figured it'd be a perfect night to close out on another really high and positive note with Missy Gannon, who's going to be joining us in just a few moments. She had a trip to Africa recently, and she's been doing some good things. Her, along with Chandler Fry, took the trip, and there's some others, so we'll get details on that. But excited to be here tonight in 2023. Hope you guys had a great Christmas, if that's something you celebrate, or any other holidays that you either have celebrated or are celebrating or are going to celebrate. We hope that everything has been safe and pleasurable, and finally, at least here in the Midwest, we're starting to thaw out just a little bit. So we're going to see some warmer weathers. You know, we're going to go from negative 20 to 50 to a positive 50 all in the matter of a few days.
Yeah, I was saying that you should really just schedule events because the weather tends to get really nice at bad times of the year for your events. You've got a flex start this Saturday that you're running. Temperatures are going to be great.
Yeah,
might be a little wet, might be a little rainy, which unfortunately is not what you want on chaining in the new year. You'd rather have maybe a little bit more snow, keep those grounds from getting torn up a little bit. But ultimately, your events tend to bring the warm weather.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, too.
I don't think so.
Yes, it does. So I've heard. So, all right.
We're about to bring Missy on, and I have a question for you real quick before we bring her on.
Yeah.
If you were to go to Africa, is there any chance in the world that you would not play the song Rains in Africa from Toto at least two or three times while you're there?
I feel like that's all too obvious. I mean, isn't that like dating or knowing a Jenny and then singing 8675309? Like you have to. Well, just the problem is it's predictability. That's the only question.
You gotta sneak that in there. You gotta find the one it's the least predictable and drop it.
Well, someone who likes to drop it like it's hot, big money, Missy Gannon, coming into the show. Missy, how you doing?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We could talk about the dumbest stuff for Okay, we will for 4 or 5 straight hours. But now we have to focus attention to stuff that really matters, which is you, your year, and spreading the love of disc golf literally worldwide. So let's start there. We hinted at it. We talked about it off and on the last few weeks and just kind of made mentions of it. Break down where you've been and what you've been up to.
Yeah, it's been kind of a couple of weeks. We just came back from Uganda in Africa. We spent almost 2 weeks there. And all of the people we met, all of the things we did, and all of the work we did was just really fulfilling. I'm just so glad that we could spread the love of disc golf to other communities that otherwise may never hear about disc golf, may never know anything about disc golf. It was just a really cool experience, and I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to go there.
And that opportunity brought up about due to the Paul McBeth Foundation. Is that how this? I know they're constantly working on new courses and developments. What number was it? Do you even know? I know there's like course development.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. The opportunity was brought up to Chandler and I through Ledgestone, actually, because they were a big sponsor of this particular project. So Chandler and I, being members of Team Ledgestone, we were reached out to by Paul Johnson to Ledgestone with the Paul McBeth Foundation on this project. And I think both of us didn't take very much time to think about it. We were both like, yep. Definitely. Never thought that we would get to Africa. Always have wanted to go, but didn't know how that would happen. Chandler and I had this conversation of like, it was always a bucket list place to go anywhere in Africa. And for it to be through disc golf was just sort of a crazy coincidence and, something that we couldn't turn down.
Talk to us just a little bit then about the actual travels, and I ask that because we've heard of Tanzania and we've heard of going to a few of the other, Zambia, it has happened, and other places, and we've seen disc golfers go there. What was the travel and the experience like for you?
I hadn't really been out of the country ever, except for... just before this trip, finally went to Peru, which was my first international few friends. But, it was just like so crazy to me that we went to two different countries in a matter of like less than 2 months. And our first international trip. So that was honestly just sort of a learning experience. It was like 2 flights, one from New Amsterdam, and then Amsterdam to Entebbe in Uganda. And I was so prepared. I had like a bunch of things downloaded on my iPad, which I didn't even watch. I didn't really know what to expect. But we were with our crew that I'm down there with. And found ways to entertain ourselves. And, Tom also came along on the trip with us. So that was really nice and comforting for me. He's a hard worker. So he was probably the perfect choice to come down and install courses. It was a lot, but it was honestly really fun. And, it was a cool way for us to kind of like bond on the flight. And I still hate landing, though. I remember that when I was younger, that I did ending, and it's true today.
Certainly often provides the roughest patch and a little bit of the clenching of Tom's knee, maybe, or hand, or the armrest.
That's right. Actually.
Yeah, exactly. I know how that goes. So how many people ultimately from the U.S. and the foundation, when we add up, you know, the whether it's media and our players, for lack of a better term, any other mules that are bringing equipment, like what how many total people were part of it that were from the U.S.?
Yeah, so from the U.S., it was, you know, Chandler and I and Tom as sort of players slash, you know, just ambassadors. And then from the foundation, it was Zach Smith, who is sort of our team leader, and he heads up a lot of these projects. We also had Jay Bowser, who was more on the media side of things, also from the foundation. Mikey, which is Paul's sort of like personal videographer. Mm-hmm. He was also to do more media stuff. And then Joey Tamale came along for the ride because, you know, Joey's just good at media stuff. So, yeah, he was, that was pretty much the crew. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. But then we also met two people that were involved in the Zambia project, who are from Zambia, Wilborn and Melody. They worked on that project. And that's all from. So they are sort of the local ambassadors for that project. But they ended up coming over and helping us with the Uganda project. So that was really cool to meet them and sort of have their experiences come over to this project and how they could bring some of that, some of that experience over for all of us and for me to hear about, you know, how it all went for them. And they were just about was established in their country that they wanted to sort of spread that onto a neighboring country.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. In mm-hmm. speaking of that experience, talk to us about the lodging or the day-to-day experiences that I'm sure were very unique to you in what you've mm-hmm. experienced all of your life. What were some of the day-to-day experiences and, you know, maybe even challenges and triumphs that you experienced mm-hmm. while you were there with it?
Actually, I think we were sort of given maybe like a under promise over deliver thing. Maybe it was by accident, but it was like, we were, you know, expecting no hot water, you know, cold shower and bug nets, needing, you know, needing bug nets over the beds and like it being, you know, potentially very buggy and whatever. But you know, we were kind of going in with low expectations and you know, having somebody like Joey Tamale, who had visited plenty of countries that have, you know, fewer resources, was able to give us a heads up of like, you know, it's going to be a little tough, but it's ultimately we're going to be fine. And if you're up for it, you know, that's just expect those types of things. But honestly, when we got there, it was right away, it was just like an overwhelming sense of community. You know, we got there and we had like a whole crew waiting for us, sort of our on the ground people that have been filling us in on, you know, our travel and what we're going to be doing while we're there. And, you know, we were greeted by, you know, a bunch of people and a big bus for us to get on and brought to our first lodging. And it was honestly really nice, private rooms, private bathrooms, and not really too buggy. And then, you know, you take a shower for the first time and you have hot water and you're like, okay, I mean, this is
winning.
Great. Like, yeah, exactly. So anyway, yeah, it was really a really positive experience, at least for the first place where we went to, which was a smaller fishing village. So even at that, in that city, we figured it was going to be, you know, the least amount of resources, just because we knew it was going, we were going to a smaller village, you know, and it happened to be probably the best accommodations that we had the whole time we were there. We had Bishop Timothy. He was our host, and he opened his, you know, entire sort of hotel type experience to us. Fed ourselves every evening with his crew on the site. It was really, really nice, and sort of just felt like a home away from home, just a little different, you know. But there were some challenges, so, you know, it is what it is, and it happened really further down the road when we were in the next city of just outside of Kampala. You know, we had some issues with maybe not any water, and, you know, but it was fine. We figured it out. It was, you know, we always had somebody helping us and trying to figure out like how we can get those resources when we, you know, maybe didn't have them, and it was unexpected. So, it was a lot of adventure, and I still wouldn't trade it for the world. I mean, it was just a really cool experience, and like I said, the sense of community was so like rich there. Everybody wanted to, you know, welcome you, and the kids were awesome. They just wanted to be your friend, and you could just feel that sort of warmth from all of the people in both the communities that we were in.
I think of that, you know, those experiences of being brought in, but then on top of it, you're providing this additional recreational outlet and activity in disc golf, and you've been around playing disc golf for a lot of years. To see the introduction of disc golf to so many people, describe, you know, how they took to it, how quick people did or didn't pick it up, or any of the successes. Is there a chance we're going to see a world champion that's going to come out of any of the players that you handed their first disc to?
I think so. So the first village that we were in, that was mainly young children that we were teaching at a local primary school. And you know, that village of Kotosi specifically has a lot of children. So the school is sort of their, you know, their safe haven. And we built the course partially on the school property and then on the adjacent property. So they're able to explore the course whenever they want, pretty much. So it was so funny to me. One vivid, you know, memory that I don't think I'll ever forget is like, having our little like clinics and having a few separate groups of children. And then, you know, they throw the disc, and then I turn around to look at the rest of the group, and it feels like it like doubled in size. Children were just like coming from everywhere. I don't know where they were coming from, but the word was spreading and more people were joining. And on top of that, you know, we had the teachers and some of the adults that just help out at the school, the people that we were sort of recruiting as the people that would, you know, continue to teach disc golf after we left. And so those were the people that we really were focusing on to teach them the, you know, as many of the ins and outs of the sport as we could, because we know how valuable it is to teach disc golf at a young age. And we could just tell that these kids just were so excited to just try anything. And, you know, they especially loved Ring of Fire. And I forgot how difficult, no matter where you're from or whatever language barriers there are, even if there aren't, it's very difficult to try to teach kids that once you put the disc, don't run after it, because you don't want to get hit by one of these. But that was not getting through most of the time. But it was just because they were so excited to try again, you know, run after the disc right away. And again, so that was just, you know, that was just funny. And there's, you know, hearing those sort of like giddy, you know, chuckles and laughs and, you know, screams is also just so universal. You know, no matter if they're here from the U.S. or, you know, the children in Uganda, it was just, it was something that was so familiar that I've seen before when we do You Play clinics and stuff like that. So yeah, they loved it. Honestly, the adults were getting into it. They were getting competitive, split up into teams, and they were, you know, I could tell they were smack talking each other. So that was really, that was just really cool to see. But even other than that, we ended up going to our second course installation was at a university just outside of Kampala, and they are known as like a sporting university. So they take pride in being very, very good at all the sports that they participate in. So when we got there, we could tell that sports were just a huge, you know, just like the biggest thing that they cared about there. And so one more competitive thing that they can try is was welcomed with open arms. And I think that we're going to definitely see some potential, you know, heavy hitters in the future. So I'm hoping so. And I really saw some just like mind-blowing talent right off. Excited to see where that goes there.
You mentioned it when you said second course installation. I guess if you could clarify for everyone, these different projects have had, you know, I feel like slightly different agendas depending on, you know, the land and the space available and everything that they can do. When it was all said and done, how many permanent baskets did you guys help install? And then what did it look like for leaving discs behind as well? Do you remember any of those numbers?
Yeah, so in the smaller village of Kotosi, we were able to install a 9-hole course. Okay. And so, yeah, then we, you know, we left a bunch of, you know, a couple of boxes of discs for the school, and more were actually being shipped there as well, and they just hadn't gotten there yet. And then at the university, we installed an 18-hole course. And also same deal. We have a bunch of donations. Tom and I brought a whole suitcase of discs to donate. And then, yeah, the foundation had some as well. And then more will be delivered there. So, so 27 holes altogether. Yeah, the course at the university was one that I actually really enjoyed playing, and had a large, you know, a wide variety of shots. And that course had two tee positions and one basket, so a short and a long. I don't remember what the overall distance was. We did map it out on UDisc, so you might be able to find it there, actually. It's at Neje University, just north of Kampala. I guess it would be only one of two dots on the map for that area, so I'm sure you could find it. I was one of the ones who went and mapped out, you know, where the pins and the tees were. It's a pretty high level course, and I think it's going to challenge. We knew we had to challenge the college students because we knew how competitive they were and how great of athletes they were. We really wanted to make that welcoming with the short tee pads, but challenging once they start to get it. So I think we left them with a pretty high quality course.
I've had the, I'll say the honor and sometimes the overall workload of being part of 30 or 35 or maybe 40 course designs, but I cannot imagine the gratitude or the fulfillment more so to know that you and a handful of other people with what you've done with your career. And now in addition to the competitiveness, you are directly and partially responsible for 27 permanent baskets in Africa. I mean, honestly, it just kind of gives me chills thinking about it. It's maybe not something somebody would think to have on their bucket list. I don't know if you ever did, but now that you've done that, How does that feel? How does that resonate in your heart or your soul with knowing you helped put disc golf in Africa?
Yeah, it's gonna land on my list of, you know, greatest accomplishments, I think. That, you know, and I'm just very fortunate to have even been given the opportunity to have any hand in this project. You know, I actually didn't know exactly how much we were going to be doing there. I knew we would be doing like clinics and you know, that the layouts were pretty much already figured out by a team that had gone out there before us. But then, you know, of course, when you get a few more disc golfers involved in a course design, things start to get tweaked and changed. And, you know, you have professionals like Chandler and I who might have a better eye for certain things just because of our experiences. So, you know, we honestly did have a pretty, you know, play a big role in the design of the course. And, you know, the we got dirty and, you know, dug things up and made the holes for the baskets, you know, all of that was pretty cool. So it does, it feels different than just kind of going there, teaching disc golf and leaving. You know, we literally went there and built a course and taught as many people as we could and met so many people. And now I have, you know, all of these phone numbers from friends that I made in both communities, and, you know, to be able to keep up with them and see how it's going. And, you know, it's going to be really cool. And I think it's something that I want to go back and in a couple of years, maybe even a year, just sort of see like where they're at and how it's going and if they need anything else or, I feel like I've made some really strong connections in after that project. And I'm definitely going to be trying to keep tabs on them and see how they're doing. And I hope to see, you know, some, you know, potentially future big disc golfers come out of there. I think it's pretty likely that we will. I just, you know, hope that I can, you know, maybe help in any way, and you know, we'll see. But I hope so.
Yeah. And along with that, whenever I think of course design, you have a different appreciation, and maybe you've already had some of that. But even I think as you travel around the country and every time you step onto either an old favorite or a brand new course that you're playing for the first time, there's just a slightly different appreciation when you see where a tee's been placed, where a basket's been placed, what trees come into play, just from a design perspective. Not that you want
to
make it.
And the work it takes to actually put them in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's there's something to be said when you see someone defacing a tee sign or hanging on a basket or, you know, kicking a garbage can next to a tee on a course or any course, and you know what it took to put a course in, and now you have those bonds and that tie that much stronger, you know, in addition to being a professional, it just hits you a little differently when, like Johnny just said, you know what it took for that to exist. Yeah. Now, I want to point out, because I continue, and I often say this, I give so much credit to the Paul McBeth Foundation in that they are typically, or they are, brand agnostic in that the foundation has worked with Discmania, has worked with Dynamic Disc, has worked with Discraft. I'm going to assume they worked with Innova. I can't think of the project off the top of my head. If they haven't, they probably will. They'll work with anyone. This happened, as you said, to be now a Discraft, you know, which is largely infused and tied then with Ledgestone in this scenario. But to me, it's huge that they'll take help and support and collaborations with anyone. But like you said, I mean, what a great tie-in for you and Chandler being part of Team Ledgestone, which is very directly tied to Discraft. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
Now, is it does it spark new thoughts or ideas for yourself? You just said, you know, making these connections and keeping up. And I don't even just mean course design specifically, but was there anything in this trip you know, start to finish, where you then you did, pause and like, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to play for a while yet, but there's other things I can see getting involved with. Was there anything in particular in this trip that struck a chord in that way that resonated that much, or not necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, the reason why I even took on this opportunity was because I saw the type of impact we can make on other communities. And, you know, selfishly, I knew that something like that would be really beneficial for a resume or something once disc golf is potentially no longer my, you know, typical, my actual job. But I didn't really think about it too much. I'm still, course design is a lot. You find a spot for a tee pad, a perfect spot, and then you start digging and you're like, well, there's a huge root and a large boulder under here, you know, and like you don't think about those things. Like, yeah, it, in theory, it's a great spot for a tee pad, but when you start peeling away the layers, you know, you might have to rethink it. I would love to do more things like that, whether it's with a foundation or with other people. It certainly opened my eyes to it. Honestly, made me appreciate disc golf more. You know, as it being my job, I kind of lose sight of like how awesome this life path has been for me, and you know, it turns into just a job sometimes, but to see how impactful a sport could be to other people that are just learning it for the first time, you know, sort of brought me back to when I started learning disc golf, and you know, how I eventually just fell in love with it, and it was just a really cool way to, you know, even just relieve stress from work or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, you know, to be able to give that goal, and give them an outlet for whatever, you know, whatever they want to use it for, whether they want to just play with family members or friends, or if they want to potentially pursue it, you know, like as a career, like many of us have. That was very, very fulfilling, and certainly, you know, like I said, made me appreciate what I'm able to do and what I'm doing right now. And so, it made me excited for the future of disc golf, for those people that I made connections with, and whether, you know, and how far they'll take it in their own lives. I don't really know how to expand on it anymore.
No, it makes sense. And I guess I even think when you have an experience like that, you may have realized, hey, I could see in another life, so to speak, or post disc golf or whatever, I could see being a tour guide. I could see being, you know, oh, hey, I'd love to be, you know, a flight attendant, but not on international trips. I mean, there's things you learn and unlearn when you, you know, so to speak, you like or dislike when having these experiences that I think, you know, you just don't even realize how they hit you. And, you know, again, course designs is one of 100 or 1,000 things you experience during that week. It's just, to me, that some of those travels can really open up your eyes to some of those other experiences.
Probably not a pilot, it sounds like. If you don't like land, I mean, maybe you can just be the pilot that takes off and have somebody else do the landing.
I hear Southwest is hiring, so they're not having their best week.
Actually, one of the things that came up when I was speaking with Melody, who was from Zambia, she was asking me, like, how do we get like a tour in Africa? And I didn't really know how to answer that question, because obviously there's a lot of things that go into developing a tour. And it was one of those things that I was like, imagine that. Africa, and Africa is huge, obviously. But even in, say, East Africa, where we were, if there were enough courses one day for them to be able to travel cross country lines and compete against one another. That I just, like, my vision started kind of going, and I again was having a hard time answering her question, but at the same time, it started making me think about, you know, the potential of that happening one day. So that would be something that, like, would be really cool to see happen, or maybe even try to figure out a way to be involved in that or try to help with that process in some way. But, you know, also Melody was very competitive, so her and I bonded over that.
She's like, I just want you back here so I can whoop you. Like, that's, she was planning ahead.
Right.
Well, and it's funny because I think of, and I just to tack on to that, I think about how the few years of going to Koh Samui, going to Thailand, going to Cambodia, these courses and these pockets in these regions that are developing, and then they're realizing, hey, if we can string together 5 or 6 or 7 weekends together, especially during what is considered our winter, if they can string those together, they may attract some international players, but also just among themselves have a very logical tour system or structure that can take place. And I've seen them working on that in Malaysia, and everyone else that's been working on that in the last few years, obviously. You know, as they were building, COVID jumped in and provided a roadblock for a couple of years. But I think that's going to for sure be the model moving forward of, let's have a tour that is often in a particular time of year that really scratches that itch that our professionals and others will go out and partake. So,
I mean, there's around 6 or 8 courses in East Africa now. And I know I'm looking at the UDISC thing, and there's like 16 of them in the Johannesburg area. So, I mean, that's not far off from maybe creating some sort of tour in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, honestly, I don't know how I didn't bring this up already, but when we were at the university, it was during the same week that they were holding the East African Collegiate Games at that particular university, which it rotates to different universities I think it's supposed to be every year, but this one had been paused because of COVID, and it had been like 3 years since the last one. So that was really cool to have all of these other colleges from all different countries in Africa, in East Africa, come there. And where the course was set up was kind of right on the main roadway, where all of the staying kind of up on the hill, they would have to walk down this road to get to all of the fields and the you know, the courts or whatever. So we literally were like posted up right near that road on purpose with a basket, with a bunch of discs, and we were just pulling people over to be like, hey, try this. Honestly, we didn't even have to do that, because they were just like, what's that? I want in. So that was just really cool to see, you know, these tall basketball players or these, you know, large wrestlers or whatever, just all, everybody just trying disc golf. And just so open to, you know, throwing a disc, even if they were, you know, they're athletes. If they throw it bad, they were laughing at themselves, you know, cause they were like, what, you know? But anyway, yeah. So the hope is that the disc golf would be a part of those games one day, and one day soon is what the player of the college is hoping. And that would be one way that I think that we can get disc golf to really, you know, spread even more, and also sort of create, not really a tour, but that idea of going other places to compete and play disc golf. And if it starts with the Kalims, great. I think that would be a perfect, you know, segue into a potential, that'd be really cool to see that, if not next year, maybe the following year, because I would love to see that sort of competitive disc golf happening on the collegiate level in East Africa. And so, that's the hope. So we're going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, and really to that, no surprise that, you know, just like you said, sometimes laughter is universal. I think the excitement and the astonishment and the bewilderment, everything else that goes along with getting a disc into a basket from, you know, anything outside of 5 feet, and sometimes even the 5 footers feel great, but just the look on anyone's face when they throw it in and it's the first time they've made one from 22 or 32 or 62 feet, whatever the case is, you know, that is for sure universal. You hear the sound of the chains and then it's that, you know, the big wide eyes of like, holy cow, I just did that. And how do I do it again? Right. That's what keeps us coming back.
And I just think of getting, you know, these people all know track and field, so they know discus, they know things, but watching a disc fly, not just a frisbee, but a disc, when you can see, like, when you hand it to someone and they throw it 75 to 80 feet and they're like, all right, yeah, and then you watch Missy or Chandler get up and throw it 400 feet, just the look, like, how do you do that? Just I can only imagine the excitement from these athletes.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And yeah, it was no surprise that the individuals that we were teaching to sort of be the teachers after we leave, even at the university, were picking it up so quickly. And just, you know, if their accuracy was off, that's fine. But they were still throwing, like, one of the teachers, Israel, he was throwing at least 300 feet. And he had just learned the sport, but he was very athletic and he was very competitive. And he was picking it up really quickly. So, I have no doubt that there will be more people at that university doing the same.
It's all those Ledgestone discs that go so far, right, Nate? That is seriously awesome to hear. Unless you have other stuff you want to add on there, I wanted to dip back into your competitive season. Is there anything else that we didn't talk about in terms of your trip that you want to make sure you mention?
No, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity. You know, I want to thank the Paul McBeth Foundation and Ledgestone for, you know, thinking of me and inviting me along to be a part of this project. It really has changed my life in some way. I don't even know that I fully realize it yet, but it was just a really awesome experience and something that I will forever be a part of in some way. So yeah, really cool. And hopefully I can get back there and see how it's all going in the future.
And I just want to say for everybody else out there, this is where your Paul McBeth Foundation money is going. Clearly, as we all know, it's going to good causes, discs, new courses. We're seeing it year after year after year. So, you know, if you're a TD and you want to help support the Paul McBeth Foundation, reach out to them. There are awesome ways to do it. You can run different fundraisers and whatnot. You know, we've got a lot of different, I think we talked about it last week, we've got a lot of different awesome foundations and charities in our sport, all of which have their own little niche. But, you know, this is, you know, Missy is heavily involved with UDisc UPlay as well. But clearly, Paul McBeth Foundation it feels like it is just light years ahead of everybody right now in the international scope. So it's awesome to see.
Yeah. And I'll add on to that real quick. If you head out there to the website, which is paulmcbethfoundation.org, I know they're making a final push for what they call their Builders Club, and that is a monthly contribution. They're trying to get to 50 Builders Club members, and I think they're at 48. So they're trying to make a final push to get to 50 of those. Or if you can't contribute at that level, they have other given levels that you can either choose or you could submit your own, and you can set yourself up for a monthly donation. But that is the Builders Club. You can find that on paulmcbethfoundation.org, and all the information is out there. So, and like I, you know, I'll reiterate yet again, it's awesome to see that they've worked with so many different brands. And I know that sometimes can be feels like a criticism of you know, when some people want to be charitable, they think, well, you know, you're just putting money in somebody's pocket or putting it from their left pocket into their right or whatever. And when you see someone like Paul and all these other people that are on the board, and a board which comes actually from a number of different brands and backing, I think is awesome to see. So, yes, that's where you can find it. And later we'll talk more about, like Johnny just said, Uplay. You certainly should support. We talked with Yuli and his foundation, yeah, and what he does just last week. Ricky Wysocki's putting together more information for his foundation. So find and support any or all of them.
Whatever scratches your itch, as exactly, we said last week.
Yes. So, all right. Well, Missy, let's talk a little bit about 2022 for yourself personally, where you cashed in every single event that you played in. But what's the grade you give for yourself, because you came off such an incredible 2021? Certainly you've set some new bars and new standards and new records. How do you come into 2022, and what's kind of the grade you give for yourself for this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I had a pretty clear understanding of like the wish. 2021 was sort of like I don't know, it felt like an unimaginable way to finish a season, especially because, you know, I had won the Des Moines Challenge earlier on, but to go back to back in two of the biggest events of the year, pretty much, you know, it was just, I don't know. I don't know why that happened or what, you know, I just knew that it was like bigger than I could have expected. But it did still add a lot of pressure on me coming into the 2022 season, because maybe my expectations were higher, but I was really aware of the fact that the way I ended 20 was just, I don't want to say unbelievable, but it was like an extraordinary way to finish. And I just wanted to make sure that I kept my head in a good space and tried not to overwhelm me or, you know, put extra pressure on me. But it was inevitable that was going to happen, because there was going to be all eyes on me come the Las Vegas Challenge. You know, how is she going to come out of the off season? But, you know, I would grade myself like a solid A, I think. Like you said, I cashed at every event. I had, you know, a little over a handful finishes outside the top 10. But for the most part, I was within the top 10. You know, I won Ledgestone, which is a 4-round event on, I would say, one of the hardest courses that we play on tour, and accompanied by maybe one of the easiest courses we play on tour, but a wide variety of shots, and you know, you need to have a pretty well-rounded skill set to be able to succeed at those courses. So that was, you know, that was a big accomplishment for me, and I grade that particular win as, you know, one of my biggest wins that I've ever had, I think, and approach that. I don't know, I think I've always wanted to win Ledgestone, and then to have done it against a relatively stacked field. You know, Kristen was there, and maybe we were missing the other European contingencies, but you know, it felt like one of the biggest fields that we've competed against. So maybe I put a lot of weight on that win, but it, you know, was one that I've always won and I've always seemed to do pretty well at. So to be able to stick it out for four rounds and finally take that one down, was really, really cool. As a Team Ledgestone member, it was just sort of extra sweet. You know, and then I think, honestly, being able to get to the final round of the Pro Tour Championship, and while I didn't come away with the win, you know, that that I feel like showed me that my consistency is there, and I was able to battle through, because I didn't have a bye this time. Last year I did have a bye to the semifinals. This year I didn't, so I had to battle through the quarterfinals, semifinals, and then the finals. So I had to play one more round than some of my competitors, and yeah, a nice way to kind of show me that my consistency was there throughout most of the season. And I think that that's one of the biggest hurdles that people have to overcome, is finding that consistency on tour, because we play so much and we play almost every weekend. I didn't find myself having too many really bad rounds. I definitely did, but yeah, I still felt like I was overcoming those bad rounds and still finishing pretty decently at almost every event. I don't know. It was pretty solid, I thought.
And I was certainly not setting you up to say anything otherwise. Let's be real. You finished with still in the neighborhood of $54,000 for your earnings, which, again, just a couple of short years ago would have been insane and was breaking records then, and now we're seeing that as you clearly were one of the top finishers, but a solid overall. You played in 23 events, or I think what was really 21 or so, straight up singles events.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly was not leaning toward anything but a glowing review, but at the same time, speak to the competitiveness. And we saw Evelina, we saw Hannah, we saw Kristen, essentially throughout, minus a few weekends, we mm-hmm. saw them throughout the entire year. And just, and Owen Scoggins, who's, FP40 eligible, and some of our other competitors. Speak to the competitiveness within the FPO division.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The level of competitiveness is also higher, even from last year, from 2021. So that's even more important to keep that in perspective when you're competing. You're competing against a stronger field every mm-hmm. single year. I feel like it gets stronger and stronger. And I'm certainly aware of the fact that really being comfortable on tour is just a huge factor in how that translates into how well you play. Like, a lot of these women are very new to the tour, but they still have the skills and they're being competitive. Now, I can only imagine what they will be able to do once they finally get sort of the rhythm of being on tour and figuring it all out, and maybe better support as they, they get their names out there and they are finishing well. Those things are key, are like a huge key into just getting better, or being, having better finishes on tour, like having a little bit less stress, a little bit less worries. One of my advantages is that I do have, I figured it out. I know how the tour life is, and I feel comfortable doing all of the stuff outside of competing. I have awesome support from my sponsors. I still know that I have a lot of work to do in terms of refining my skills, getting a stronger forehand, because I know that at some point these other women are going to catch up, just because they are so new and so fresh to the tour that, if they're already competing at the level that they are, with having those sort of little struggles that I remember having, not even little, big struggles of just touring and, everything that comes with that. I know they're coming in hot and I need to know that I have to go that extra mile to be able to, combat that and still be, consistent and placed high at many of the events. So, Yeah, you know, I'm excited to see what 2023 is going to bring. I think that it's going to bring a lot of that elevated talent, more of the same people that we saw last year, but maybe just on a more consistent basis, or at least performing at the top. And I've got my work cut out for me. I know that. And aside from helping other communities and building disc golf courses, I am going to be very active in my game and refining those skills, and just not stopping, because I know what's coming and they're coming in hot.
So do you have any expectations for 2023, seeing as how we just talked about your expectations coming into 2022 after your 2021 season? Do you have any expectations for 2023? Like, do you go into a season thinking like, all right, I've cashed at every event in 2022. I definitely want to do that, but now I want to ...
You know, I think I try not to have too many expectations coming into any season. At this point it sounds cliche, but I just have to focus on every event and every round, and every shot. You know, you hear it all. It is true. If I think too broadly, I think that you can get ahead of yourself a little bit, but, with that though, I will feeling pretty good about Worlds this year. So, you know, that would be a pretty cool thing to accomplish. And I'm trying to get that world title. It's going to be hard, but, you know, the Green Mountain Championship courses are another set of courses that I feel at. And I think that I could perform pretty well there.
And you're currently in New York for, I'm assuming, for the holidays, visiting family and whatnot. Mm-hmm. When does the 2023 season start? When do you find someplace warm, I'm assuming, and get on the course and start putting and work on that forehand? When does that show up for you?
Yeah, it's going to be first week in January. We will be heading down to Florida and just getting the season going there. We're going to be doing some training, but also some media stuff. But yeah, it's right after the new year. It's go time. And, you know, I think that I've been sort of doing non-disc golf training to keep my body healthy and ready to go.
But digging holes, putting in baskets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was probably the
fighting
most workout I've done since the season ended. It's still good. I did play disc golf in Uganda, obviously, but it's still good to kind of take a little bit of a break. At least in my opinion, it is, from actually throwing the disc. Really focusing on strengthening the body. But once the new year hits, it's back to the course, back to the field, for me. So I'm excited though. It's cold here.
Understandable. And that's what I start thinking about is, when we're seeing our players, they naturally are gravitating towards a lot of Florida. Obviously, we've seen some players in Charlotte where we know it can vary in its weather conditions. Arizona has clearly become a great collection plate for a lot of our players that have been jumping in there and either fully residing, as Ricky just bought a place, or, you know, going there to shack up with a few other golfers. It all makes so much more sense. And I feel like that, again, is an evolution of the game, where that was kind of maybe thought about, but not really actually done. And now people are consciously planning, hey, where am I going to be during which months? And what are those months going to look like, even though it's not hardcore playing season?
When we were younger, long time ago, we used to always think like, oh man, it's such an advantage to live down south because you get to play year round. You know, Barry Schultz, who was from Wisconsin, always took winters off. He'd climb down in Florida, and Ron Russell was up in Michigan, I believe, for most of the time. It just felt like those players had such a natural advantage based on where they live, because no one was moving for disc golf.
No.
That didn't exist. Now we've got players that are like, yeah, I think in January I'm going to head down to Florida and do that. It's an amazing progression that we've made.
Some people have their second houses in nice places, I tell you. We're getting big time here, which is awesome to see. Is there anything that you would consider out of the ordinary or a surprise or a shocker to anyone else when thinking about your 2023 season? Is there an event or a location or even a week off or something where someone's like, huh, that's different for Missy? Do you have anything like that possibly planned? Or is it we would expect?
Yeah, not really. I do plan to be in Europe this year. So that'll be a first for me. I think that's going to be really cool. And it all, you know, having the Sula Open now be an Elite Series sort of helped make that decision. Cause I really wanted to get to the European Open, but being able to also have compete in an Elite Series there as well. Made that decision easier, to be able to travel there and play more than one event. I think that will be, really the only like new thing that might be surprising, but really just, I think it was just sort of inevitable that I would make it to Europe at some point. So that looks like that'll be this year. So I'm really excited about that. I've toyed with the idea of kind of skipping California. I am currently signed up for the OTB Open. You almost kind of like lose money going to Florida even if you play well, just for tax reasons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So kind of just weighing those options of if it's worth it. I love the OTB Open. I play pretty well there, but you know, it would be the only event that I would attend in California, and so that's where it gets a little tough to justify the costs and everything. Other than that, I think everything's pretty much the same. I do have, I think, one or two silver events on the schedule. I think I'm going to play Beaver State, which I think is a silver event. And so that'll be cool to be back there. I didn't play this year. I've only played it once before, and that was, I think, way back in like 2019, maybe. I'm excited to get back to Milo and give that course, those courses another try and see how I fare there. Hopefully it's not, you know, monsooning this year like it did last year. But if it is, you know, it's all good. It's Milo, so I'll be happy to be there.
Yeah, it's beautiful no matter what. Yeah, assuming where they're also staying clear of the fires that we know have gotten quite close as well.
The monsoons just make that area greener.
Yeah, they need more
rain,
a little more lush.
So we kind of have to ask. It's that time of the season. You planning on staying with Discraft? I'm assuming you're still under contract, right? You know, nothing's changing.
Yes.
You have one or two more
it'll
years.
Be my one more year on, okay. It was a 2-year contract in 2022. I'm happy. They're a great sponsor. I'm excited for, our team this year. That's all I'm going to say. It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool.
What do you make of the swapping and the switching and the adding and deleting and everything else of all these players in these teams when you're locked in, you know, because right now you're essentially, maybe you're providing some kind of consulting and or bouncing either ideas and or maybe you're just a listening block. I don't know. But what do you make of a year when you're just sitting back and you're like, yep, none of this really pertains to me. I'm locked in with my contract. Mm-hmm. I'm not going anywhere. Do people call you? Are you a sounding board? Is there a Missy Gannon hotline? Like what? How does this work for you?
For me, I'm just back and watching it all go down. But reasons, I'm so glad that I don't have to go through that whole contract negotiation thing. You know, it's stressful. And even though I do work with Schaefer Sports, it's still stressful. You know, it's you build these relationships with your team managers and the people at the companies. And, you know, it gets a little dicey when you start talking money. And, you know, it's never like too crazy, but, you know, it feels weird. It's uncomfortable no matter what, if you have representation or not. But no, I have a really strong relationship with, Bob at Discraft, and, you know, they've, and Mike and Gary, who's there as well, you know, they asked me for, you know, any ideas of who I would like to see on the team, or, you know, they've used me as sort of an on the ground resource of like, who do you think fit team and, stuff like that. So that just feels really good that they trust me and who I think would work well on the team. You know, I try to be friendly with everybody and really get to know people, especially with all of the new players that are coming on tour. You know, obviously mostly FPO players, but I do hang out with all different people on tour. And so, I try to get to know them, and I know what it's like. I know what it was like when, you know, the support was small and you just sort of basically the pre-COVID, you know, phase of just actually grinding out on tour. It's still like that for the new players, maybe just a little less, especially if they're performing well at the events now that the payouts are higher. But, you know, I sort of like remember my roots and how difficult it was coming up, that I tend to sort of keep an eye out for those kind of players who might need that extra word, or people that I could see have so much potential in their game, but maybe they're just, you know, stressed out getting to and from events or, you know, whatever. I've been there. And so, I've kind of taken on a little bit of like a scowl, you know, not officially, just, it's just nice to have that relationship with your, you know, the manufacturer that sponsors you, that they trust you and your, you know, and who you think work well on the team. So I sort of provided a little bit of that for this year.
So but, then I have to ask for the FPO team.
Yeah.
Are we going to see some changes on the Discraft FPO team? You don't have to just
tell us who are they?
I mean, ultimately our goal is to make you spill the beans, but we haven't been successful with any guest. We tried with Yuli last week.
Everything is going to happen over the next couple of weeks. You'll find out.
Yeah, or you could just tell us now. Then we don't have to wait.
What's the point of waiting?
You just have to be patient.
nobody likes
patience. All right, so Missy said big, huge changes to the FPO team.
Yeah.
That's what
huge.
I heard. Huge.
Huge. Well, and I want to touch on that for a moment before I want to talk about
the Missy Gannon fierce. That's what I heard.
You know, and maybe directly or indirectly, when you're talking and explaining people that are newer to the tour that are don't have it quite, maybe I don't want to say as comfortable, but are learning their ways, they're navigating. I think of people like Holland Hanley. I think about Macy Valadez.
The Mondejano sisters.
They're a little more familiar with this, tour life, I guess.
So this was only their second year on tour.
I know. I mean, just think they've been... But they've been playing so many more events than most. I think of a Leah Sinigini. It just like so many of these women who are committing to the tour and are, like you said, they're navigating, they're learning their ways through it. And if that even translates, you know, to them getting a little bit more comfortable, their game, you know, levels up, so to speak, that much more. Yeah, I could see. I mean, and just think, three of our top players in FPO being Evelina, Hannah and Kristen, Talk about, I'll call it just a flat-out disadvantage. They're literally in another country for half the year on the other side of the world from where they live. And they got, Kristen definitely has it figured out, and the other two are right there with her. It's pretty impressive. Just think about with once they get used to, like, oh, I've already been to these courses. I already know where to go, where not to have gunshots at in this parking lot, like Evelina was talking about. Like, once they get more comfortable as well, they're going to be, again, that much more of a force. It's pretty exciting to see and watch it unfold. So that's what I wanted to segue over to, though, is when we talk about sponsors, obviously Discraft, obviously Ledgestone, but you also often name off a few other sponsors. So first of all, I'd like you to do that if you want to recognize sponsors.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about one or two of the other unique ones you have. So who?
Yeah. So Grip Equipment. My bag sponsor. Also Whale Sacks, my, you know, hand drying sponsor. I don't know what to call them. They're also great friends. So, you know, yeah. And then, Good Dog Seltzer Company. They're a hard seltzer company that picked me up this year. Again, through Schaefer Sports Management. That's the pretty unique one that you were alluding to.
Yep.
I do drink hard seltzer. I like it. And it just felt so fitting. It felt extra fitting because not only are they a hard seltzer company, but they a portion of their proceeds to help children with terminal illnesses, typically, or children that need, service dogs. They provide resources for that to happen. And when I heard that, it was just sort of like, it just felt so right. And not only that, it just felt like this so many other sports have, however you feel about alcohol, so many other sports have alcohol sponsors in some capacity. And the fact that this company was so excited to get into disc golf and to learn that, you know, a lot of us disc golfers are dog lovers, and they're, you know, we have our tour dog family. Relationship. And they came out to Maple Hill. That was actually one of their like big events that they came to sponsor, set up a booth right near hole 8, and it was a huge hit. So many people came over. I went over to the booth to hang out while the MPO were playing, and so many people came over, and they were just excited to have the seltzer company there, and they were, the company was just so excited to be there. And they said that this is something that, you know, they knew was going to be a really cool endeavor for them, but they didn't, I think, having been at Maple Hill and Maple Hill is one of the best places to go and one of the places that we all look forward to going, that, to basically be a part of the 8 holes and be in that environment and just see how cool and how passionate disc golfers and disc golf fans are about the sport. I think they were just like, wow, this is awesome. We will be coming back every single year as long as they'll have us. It seemed like a huge hit. And I'm just excited to be the first, ambassador for Good Dog Seltzer and to sort of bring them over into the sport of disc golf. And I hope that, they pick up more players or events, or they, just are involved in disc golf more than they want to be. And maybe this will be like the beginning of more of these types of sponsorships coming into the sport. I think it's going to be really beneficial for the sport in the long run.
And one of my favorite parts, and obviously this is why it resonated and touched you, is the fact that the tie to dogs, and I think it the lesson is, not every person, you know, has to have a cookie cutter sponsorship. And the mm-hmm. fact that you, you know, have partnered with them in the way that you have because of your feelings and because of your, you know, just your connections and having a dog and everything else, it just, like you said, mm-hmm. felt so obvious and natural. And the next person may have to find something else that resonates and has that connection. And I think that's mm-hmm. what makes it so much more not only personable, but genuine and more just overall more impactful for sure. So I absolutely love that.
For sure. And I love being able to have like a silhouette of a dog on all of my shirts because it's perfect. And it makes people ask. They're always like, is that your dog? And I'm like, well, it's my sponsor, Good Dog Seltzer. And I get to say the whole spiel and what they're about and, you know, just spread that information around. And it was an awesome sponsorship partnership. It'll continue. And I'm just excited to see where it goes.
Well, and then that my follow up to that is, you know, you've just mentioned Whale Sax, Grip, Ledgestone, Discraft, and the seltzer. So the remaining question is, are there any needs not being fulfilled that you're actively looking for? If somebody's listening now or somebody who knows somebody says, oh, whether it's umbrellas or shoes or raincoats or carts or you name it, whatever it might be.
Gas.
Yeah.
Exxon. Yeah.
Could you use any gasoline or maybe propane in your case? Are there any other, you know, active needs that you're certainly would be listening to the right sponsor that came along?
Honestly, I mean, I feel like I have like the whole thing covered, you know, I've got my back covered, got my hands covered, got my, you know, drinking covered.
Hey, New Year's is coming up.
My apparel. I mean... yeah, right. My apparel covered. You know, I feel like I've got it all covered, but, you know, I'm always open to conversation. And, you know, there's probably things that I might need that I can't even think of. You know, that's also the luxury of working with an agent is mm-hmm. that, you know, they can sort of seek out. They've learned who I am and what I like and what I don't like. And, you know, they can kind of seek those things out for me, which has been really nice. So yeah, not that I can think of, you know, I think, I feel pretty good where I'm at and, yeah.
Okay. And someone on the board said truck stop sponsorship would be cool. And I guess depending on whether that's, obviously there's the gas component and then there's sometimes the showering component. But I think of for like yourself, you guys often are at RV parks, campgrounds. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the route in which you take in terms of most of your lodging and mm-hmm. and setting up and whatnot. Right. That's how you guys go about it.
So yeah. Is there
any tie? I mean, RV camping world? Do they need to reach out or something like that?
Maybe. I was even thinking, you know, there's basically a handful of like large camper companies that have just like various models of different campers. But like, I mean, maybe whoever makes this camper would be interested mm-hmm. in, you know, as me posting about it every now and again or whatever, but yeah, that could be cool. You know, I would love to see other sponsors like that get into the sport because, you know, even think about all the Ford Transits that are roaming around the country mm-hmm. and the Ram ProMasters and you know, there's a lifestyle there that I think that they could really like potentially benefit from, and also obviously we would benefit from sponsorships from those types of companies too. I just don't know how to get into that door. You know, we're still like kind of small. I know we're like gaining more travel, are learning about the sport, and you know, you see it now in TV shows and stuff like that, but one day, you know, hopefully it's almost like, isn't it the, isn't Ford like one of the sponsors of the
European
President's
Open.
Cup or what?
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we could figure something out like that here in the States. I think that would be really.
Yeah, and I, of course, we've seen such a huge influx of people, you know, taking to the van life and that overall concept and building out their vans. I mean, we see that throughout the entire U.S. with a lot of people. But the fact that we're seeing it so much more with our professional disc golfers who are then maintaining a professional sporting career in addition to their van mm-hmm. life. It feels like a lot of that van life can be a little bit more recreational or you know, just a lower cost of living. But the fact that we're seeing people thrive and succeed in addition to creating the van life, there might be mm-hmm. a little bit of a stronger tie for us. But either way, it's been incredible to see. And I guess maybe final question on your lodging here. We're talking houses on wheels here. Camper has been your setup. Have you guys, like, give everyone the pros and cons to a fifth wheel versus a large RV versus a pull behind camper? Like, how did you guys arrive at what works best for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, the having a towable camper and a separate car has just been the way that works the best for us. You know, we're able to set up our camper and still have a vehicle to drive around once we're set up in each location. There's pros and cons to both. I mean, when it comes to like fifth wheels versus tow behinds, it all kind of is the same, other than just like size of the camper. We've kept it on the smaller side on purpose, just so that we have more options of, you know, where we can park and, you know, just to keep those options open and not have to worry about just having a colossal camper mm-hmm. that we're towing mm-hmm. around. And obviously, like, gas mileage is always a thing. But, you know, then there's still the added, you know, worry of maintenance and, you know, now you have basically two things that you have to worry about, your car and your house pretty much. And it's just not for everybody. A lot of people don't want to have to deal with unhooking, hooking up and towing and wind and all of the things that, that could happen and that you could come across with a camper. So that's where the van life is nice, because it's a little bit more, you know, inconspicuous. You can kind of park, maybe be able to park, outside of a Planet Fitness or thing, you know, we can't really do that. It's not really technically allowed. It's at a lot mm-hmm. of places. Yeah, just obviously a lot of the van lifers, there's a few people that the van, which is pretty much like the capacity of the van life, unless you're okay with like right on top of all of them. But for, you know, it's Tom and I, we have two dogs, like we kind of need extra space and that, that, you know, spread out a little bit. And we currently don't have a house of our own. We can't just like dump stuff off at our house and travel with have. So we require a little bit more space, and it just seems to work for us. And we'll drive, you know, have a larger driving camper, and they tow a smaller car behind. It's similar to what we do, just a little bit different. And yeah, just different people have different needs, and I think there's pros and cons to all of the different styles of touring. And you know, then you have the little minivan people, and that works for them too. You know, whatever's going to get you from point A to point B, and you have somewhere to sleep and all of that are all viable options for tour life. It's just whatever works for you.
Well, we've seen it all in some capacity, and they continue to get better and more elaborate year after year. And it's also just a tiny little glimpse into the growth that our sport has had, and the support that our players like yourself have rightfully been gaining. So, and I'm hoping within 2, maybe 3, maybe 5 years, everyone's internet's going to be amazing. So every single show we have, when you're remote locations, always are seamless and without any lost connection. So that's my segue to, we're going to wrap stuff up with you. Sounds like it was getting a little choppy with you, and everyone will scream because nobody likes bad audio, and it's not your fault. Everyone's on the road. But I think we've got so many of the goods from you tonight in your experience in Uganda and the two courses that you were part of and everything else. And I can only imagine all the smiles that you saw, and then even inwardly with yourself and Tom and Joey and Chandler and everyone else, the entire disc golf world and community certainly thanks you and the foundation and all the sponsors. I can't think of two better representatives to send over than yourself and Chandler, along with the rest of the crew you had. Thank you for everything you did over there, and hopefully that even internally pays dividends for the rest of your life. It's pretty incredible to hear, Missy.
Yeah. Again, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be a part of that project and to be a part of this community, this disc golf community. I look forward to 2023. I hope the connection good for the most part, maybe just towards the end. Just happy to share my experience, and just really excited to see where golf goes in Uganda and in all the rest of, you know, Africa. And hopefully, you know, I could be involved in other projects as well. If not, though, I'm definitely going to continue to, keep tabs on how it's going in Uganda and keep up with all of the people down there that I've made connections with, because I have a feeling it's gonna take off pretty quickly. So I'm excited. I'm excited about that. And yeah, thank you for having me on the show to share my experience. And
Well, I'll say it again. We cannot. There's not a better representative and ambassador for our sport, MPO or FPO side, doesn't matter. We thank you for everything that you did over there, and thank you again for joining us to, like you said, share your experience. That many more people know not only about what you did, but also what the foundation and just overall what we can do within disc golf and how we can help it grow into this worldwide love affair that we all have with it. Hopefully it can foster more of that. So Missy, have a great, super safe new year. We hope that good dog takes good care of you through the new year. We trust that you will. And we're looking forward to what you're going to do in 2023. You already know this. You're a pleasure to see out on the course and to talk to and to interview. And great play we know is in store as well. So looking forward to seeing you in 2023. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Have a good night. See ya. Good old Missy Gannon.
Yeah, great Missy Gannon.
It doesn't get much better than that. So glad she could join us. And I put it in the chat earlier. I'll put it in there again. We do not get paid for this, but we're happy to do so. If you head over to shopledgestone.com/collections/Missy Gannon. It's in the chat. You can find her. Just go out to the webpage if you want to support her. Of course, that's through her. One of her primary sponsors in Ledgestone, and pick up some stuff out there. I was just on the site to look at it. She's got her t-shirts out there, polos out there, of course, a Thrasher. She just bags 37 Thrashers, so you can guarantee she's going to have some of those online. A Big Money Missy t-shirt and Missy Gannon hats, those and other things. Wow, there's patches. I don't have all data. She's got great stuff out there, so go find it, as I said, on the Ledgestone site. Or stop by one of her other sponsors in Grip.
Support them that way.
Yeah. Or Discraft. So.
But she wouldn't give up the goods on the team.
Well, that's why we're going to start rumors tonight, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any rumors to start?
We do not have any rumors to start, but we do have a few. I don't say small. I don't want to, by any means, put a size on these announcements. Thomas Gilbert announced that he's signing with a lot of people are calling it TSA. It's Thought Space Athletics.
TSA might carry a slightly terrible connotation
right now. It might
at this exact moment.
So Thomas Gilbert is not going to be working at your local airport.
Although I could see that
it would be great.
He'd love to walk up to the TSA desk and Thomas Gilbert just standing there with a smile on his face.
It's like,
his
come on,
great
through.
Canadian
doing the wand.
Yeah, I would take that all day. But no, Thomas Gilbert
Thought
will make
Space
more
Athletics.
Money. Throwing frisbees around this year, and he's going to be doing that for Thought Space Athletics, as we said, TSA. A couple other people that we saw with some recent announcement, Stacey Haas. I don't know how much longer ago this was, but she does have an extension.
She was with
MVP
already,
and
but
so
she
this
did.
Is going to be an extension through 2024. So 2-year extension. Mm-hmm. 23 and 24 for Stacy. Also, I think we just saw the extension announced. I don't think it was before last week's show.
No. Chris Clemens. Signed an extension with DD. It sounds like it was a 1-year extension with DD.
Yes.
We saw that kind of a small surprise that for Prodigy, we saw them, one of their young players is leaving the team. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Will Schusterick?
No, he's not leaving.
No. Gavin Babcock?
Gavin Babcock.
Yes, saw that as well.
He announced that, to be clear, he didn't necessarily say he was leaving the team, but he said that there are some changes in his sponsorship. So whether that means that he will no longer be with Prodigy, maybe he'll come back in a different...
Oh, is he being tricky?
I don't think he
is. I did read it, but I'm going to read it again. As to how it was worded, and then I will infuse my own interpretation, which may or may not be correct.
I think that him and Prodigy are parting ways based on the thing. I believe it was out on his Instagram post.
You got to do it for the gram.
You got to do it for the gram. Now, what I want to see, obviously, is the new Alden Harris video where they're taking... interviews for the next Gavin Babcock in the interview series.
Would make sense, yes.
We got to find out what's going on.
All right. So the exact phrasing for Gavin on his Instagram. Oh, how am I not following this? Click, followed.
Yeah, how are you not following Gavin?
I don't
Gavin?
Know. That was kind of weird. I am now. Where he says, thank you, Prodigy, for the last 2 years. I was able to start my pro career with this company, and I'm thankful for their willingness to support me in the early portion of my journey. Some of my greatest accomplishments have been with them, and I will never forget these moments. Dot, dot, dot. With that being said, I'm extremely excited for the changes coming up to the 2023 season. Sponsor announcement coming soon. You are absolutely right.
It leaves a little bit of wiggle room.
It does. No. That's just a coy way of then coming back and saying his sponsorship's been increased or has changed.
Sure.
That certainly has that potential.
Yeah. I don't necessarily know if that's the case. And if you want to throw some gasoline on the fire, the very first comment, or not maybe necessarily the very first, but Kona Panis gave the eyeball emoji. So a lot of people are saying, well, it's clear then. He's going to DD. I don't necessarily know if that's the case, but...
Or she's just sticking
surprised.
A claim for needing new glasses.
That could
she's
be it, too.
Got the eyeball emoji.
That could be it, too.
Out there. So, yes, we'll keep an eye on that. Also, just prior to the show starting, he did it right, folks. Andrew Presnell talking about his extension with Discraft. So, we saw that announced just today.
And
got to make sure we get that in there.
He's on the touring team now. He's not on the elite team.
I think he
made a post saying he's happy to stay with Discraft, and he's going to try. He's much motivation for next year to get up to that elite team. Same with Ben Calloway. Calloway announced he is staying with Discraft as well.
Yes, and I thought I saw a similar reference point regarding the team.
Distinction.
I didn't know
where they were before, so I didn't want to say if it was a demotion or promotion. I just a distinction.
Emerson Keith was last week, right? I don't know Emerson, if not, we'll regurgitate yep, Emerson it. Emerson Keith. Keith.
Vanessa Van Dyken re-signed with extension with Discraft for a 1 year.
One person that's on, we'll say the he's on the sponsorship tracker chart that we haven't heard anything out of is Alex Russell, who's been with Innova for a number of years. We haven't seen any remarkings one way or another.
I don't see him leaving personally. I mean, he could, but
there's a lot of crazy stuff we've seen.
There's a lot of crazy. Alex Russell isn't. I mean, unless he goes on full time tour, like he's just not a name that a lot of people are running for now. We have to discuss some of the bigger rumors that are going around.
What?
One Chris Clemens was seen posting saying that one of, and he put it in quotes, big boys, not you, not the restaurant.
Could be me.
I don't think it's you.
Could be.
I don't believe it's you.
I don't know. I've been called big boy before.
Is going to change, and I believe his phrasing was, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. So what a lot of people are speculating is they're trying to think of the quote-unquote big boys in disc golf. You've got your Paul, who we see Discraft is already announcing 2023 discs for, so I don't believe he's moving anywhere. Ricky is pretty locked in with DD. Calvin just re-signed. To me, that kind of leaves just a few names left out there.
Chris Dickerson is locked into
is locked in. Mm-hmm, it leaves the name Gannon Burr. Mm. It leaves the name Simon Lazat.
Who's currently under contract.
Yep. Simon Lazat, Eagle McMahon, both of which are under contract also technically under contract. For another year. But there's a lot of rumors right now flying around about Simon.
Mm.
And I don't know how much legitimacy they have. I've seen people say that, you know, and these are just random internet people.
There's a lot of random internet people.
Right now, technically, I guess we're random internet.
We are.
Someone had said that Simon is going to a Michigan company is what I saw. And they left it at that.
Who's in Michigan?
That would be maybe MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
who else is there?
Discraft.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, maybe a sub company from one of those that they make discs for. You know, DGA is a California company, but Discraft makes their discs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thought Space is made by MVP.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, technically, while that company might not be located there, the discs are made there. They're just thoughts. So right now, the big rumor is Simon leaving and going to one of either MVP or Discraft. I tried to get Terry to message Simon to get the insider info. And the funny thing is, Simon Tuesday nights are usually his dart night. So he's probably too busy right now throwing darts at a sponsorship board, figuring out where he wants to go.
Unless that's your clever hint at the end of a dart.
Oh, I didn't think of that. But again,
lots of molds made by Discmania, obviously with their Innova origins. It seems like it would be a logical transition if he were to, you know, have I said before that the Cloudbreaker is a destroyer? Have I said that?
I think you've said that.
Don't come at me, Discmaniacs. I know you're going to get all worked up.
And here's the thing. I think a lot of people are pointing to Simon because he's got the longest contract. He's been under contract for 4 full years now. Technically, his contract ends next year. Eagle signed a 2-year last year, so he still goes through 2023. Simon's quote-unquote contract maybe isn't as rock solid as some of the ones we've seen more recently signed.
Mm.
There are rumors that there's some sort of trade involved, which I'm not going to necessarily put any money or buy on. That was the original rumor, was that he was maybe going to go to Latitude 64. That there was something in the fact that Lat 64 is part of the company that's working with Discmania, and that maybe there was a trade involved. I'm not putting any stock in any trade rumors, because we've never in our lives seen a trade between two companies for a player.
Yeah, it. I mean, like, you could have one player get picked up, or I'm sorry, one player leave a team, and then another player on that team leaves the team and then joins over. But trade is just not a word that really gets associated with our disc golf contracts. I mean, nope. Like you would find on a basketball or a baseball team.
Correct.
For instance.
Because yeah, we're ultimately, not really... sponsors aren't in control of players like they are with a team. You sign a contract, I'm willing to bet that one sponsor can't just sell that contract to another sponsor. I don't believe that's a possibility. So the term trade to me seems really out of line. Now, if someone gets out of a contract, we've seen that plenty enough in the last few years. That's one thing. Maybe somehow there's a buyout option. I don't know. We don't even know necessarily if it's Simon. Could be Eagle. Could be one of our other top players. Who knows, Terry? What other top players are out there?
I think one of the biggest challenges now is that we have learned through the last few years that although we have contracts,
they're toilet paper in the rain,
are still often broken, ended amicably, which is a big word for me to say, or not. But contracts have come and gone. The fact that there is one, we all agree, is great. However, rarely have these contracts seemingly been rock solid and or, you know, the final end all be all, because we've all talked about it, how if and it's really funny when it comes to even an individual sport, like if you're miserable at a company, and like at what point is it obvious, and or are you doing yourself and this other company a disservice? Now, but I know there's probably clauses and obligations, but if you're not fulfilling them with any
vigor, excitement,
yeah, I was going to say anything that's genuine, genuity. What's the word for, what's the other way you'd say?
Just make up a word, like genuinity.
Yeah, like genuine.
Genuine.
My pony.
My pony. I knew that was coming. Damn it.
It has to be. That's the only way. And who makes the pony or the stud? The colt. Innova. So, throwing more darts. <It's> Anyway.
That's some like 4D chess right there, Terry.
I know. We all knew Genuine would get in, would eventually get into the conversation. So, there are so many, you know, that's why it's funny to look at contracts, and they're great because they give us some expectation. But then when a contract does anything but extends, then it just feels kind of funny these days. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to see what the board has to say for a moment here.
Those are
pure speculation. Danny says, I can't imagine Discmania didn't breach a production clause of Simon's contract from 2022 or from 2020 to now. Here's what we'll say. And this is a generic response to that. It's been funny to see in here whether it's the player or the company that has either promised and or demanded any form of productions. And what I'm, I guess, trying to say is sometimes players have no idea what's been produced and have just, quote unquote, blindly accepted a check.
We saw that. That was the question we asked Paul McBeth when he moved from Innova to Discraft, if he knew his Innova numbers officially. And he said he did not.
Yeah, and Nate Sexton, for instance, doesn't know how many Firebirds will get printed in 2023. He just does not know that answer. He knows he will cash the checks when they show up, but he doesn't know if you said, I need within accuracy of 100, quantity of 100, tell me how many 2023 Firebirds. He couldn't give you that answer. He couldn't bet his life on that. He couldn't bet one of his Firebird checks on it that he knows that. And I'm just using them as an example. Every company now is just a little bit different with how they structure that. Mm-hmm. If your discs are made and a manufacturer may come along and say, you know what, MPO player X, we're going to make 5,000 of your discs. And if they sell, we'll make more of them. They may say that to one person, and you go to a different company and they say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make 1,000 of your discs. And only And only 1,000 per month. That's the max we can give you. If they all sell, great. If they don't sell, great. But we're only making 1,000 per month, but we'll give you up to 12 months for that to be a possibility. I mean, every mm-hmm. single manufacturer, and then a lot of the manufacturers, the little insider I can tell you is their bonuses can be based on if you sell X amount of discs. So we're giving you a guaranteed contract for blank. And that includes, or that's with the assumption that 10,000 of your discs sell. If you get to that 10,000 discs, you're getting your full contracted amount. But if you sell another 10,000, you're going to get this much more. So with some of the companies, your earnings can feel almost unlimited, assuming those discs are being made. If you say to them, "Hey, you sold 10,000," and then you say, "Well, we're not going to run anymore for you," then your hands are tied. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of different factors that can go into it. And so just simply replying to Danny when he's talking about contracts and production clauses, some of those clauses aren't even built into these contracts, depending on how old they are and depending on how popular you are. Let's face it, if you're not a popular player and or throwing a disc that inherently has some popularity to it, you may not structure your contract that way, which makes perfect sense. You might be a really, really good player, but if your name's on a disc and it doesn't sell, let's be real, that disc may not be the best choice for you either. Sure. Let's just face it, not everyone can have...
I should not have picked the Typhoon.
No.
I'm just saying, no. I thought it was going to be...
a whirlwind decision, but not a good one.
I thought it was going to be a great one. I get it, Terry. I should have gone with the Cyclone.
So there's just so many things that factor into us. And let's be real, 99% of people on the internet don't really know what they're talking about.
Kind of speaking of which.
Who are you going to call out?
I'm going to call it Ace Run. I love you, Ace Run.
They don't know what they're talking about.
No, Ace Run says, "I can't believe the MVP rumors being true. They'd have to give Simon part ownership of the company to have any validity."
No. I'm just going to say that generically.
That
often gets thrown around.
100%. That's what I was going to go with this. Part ownership of the company. I'm going to put that in big air quotes. I don't think you're seeing that with any major manufacturer, period. Like, no... you're not going to see it with Lone Star. You're not going to see it with Clash. You're not going to see it with MVP, Discraft, Innova. Nobody is getting a part of those privately held companies. Nobody.
Yeah.
Like, not Lat64, not Westside, not Prodigy. I mean, we saw what was kind of considered ownership in Prodigy years ago, but really... Again, I never saw the contract, so I don't want to speak of that. But let me tell you this. Maybe other than Will Schustrick, maybe Kale, who are still probably the only two that were originally with that company, any of those players that walked away, they don't have any ownership of that company. Zero. And ownership is a loose term. I don't know if Will Schustrick has any ownership in Prodigy. I don't know if Kale does. Maybe they get a portion of the proceeds, of the profits, depending on how long they've been there and whatnot. But actual ownership, I think either of them could probably walk away and not walk away with any ownership of that company. I just don't think... I know a lot of people like to throw the term ownership around.
Yeah.
I don't think we're seeing it. I don't think we'll ever see it. I think, A, we're already too big for that.
Yeah, I think that's putting a lot of... eggs in any basket in any player ever in order to even make that type of offer. It just doesn't seem like something that would... Now, could that carrot get dangled? It could, and maybe it could happen, but that's often thrown around as kind of the end-all be-all possibility. And it's funny that possibility is so often mentioned, mm-hmm. I guess, is kind of what Johnny is saying. So
I think you're more likely to see something like the Paul Macbeth, kind of a hybrid where, let's just say, someone wanted to entice Simon to come over, and they say, "We're going to form a separate company for you, Simon, the the SVP, the Simon's most valuable player of Simon Valley Plastics, depending on, you know, what you want to talk about. And we're going to produce discs for you. You are going to own that company. I don't think you're personally ever going to see somebody come in and take a ownership or part ownership or percentage ownership of any company. That's just, I every time I see that, I kind of chuckle to myself and I think it ain't happening.
But Ace Run, we love your secondary thought, which is we'd give Simon part ownership of Ace Run to rep us. Wouldn't be worth much of anything, but we'd be down. I mean, yep. You got to shoot your shot.
Dangle that carrot.
As the kids say.
Dangle you that carrot. I
could do that. as funny as this is about to sound, I know exactly of what is and isn't happening, and like I'll say down to almost the details. And of course, as many of you have already claimed, I'm not going to share it.
There's no advantage to us sharing that. We've talked about this off the air.
Yeah. As Johnny said earlier today, people are putting things in place, and I do not feel as a fan of the game and as someone who works with not just multiple companies, but it's just not my place. And that's not to say we don't love to give exclusive news or have, you know, updates or learn new things from players, whether they were intending to share or not. But when it's of something of such significant magnitude, I just do not personally feel like it's my place to bring it to light. And I know most of you, many of you may think that's silly or crazy or stupid or selfish or whatever you want to attach a label to it, and that's fine. But that's what I will share is I do know the details of what's happening with whomever, and it's just not my place to share it. Mm-hmm. If they wanted it shared, I would have had a conversation with them and it would have gone that route, but they didn't. And so therefore, now would they be mad? Maybe or maybe not. To me, it's just not worth risking, is what I'll say to it.
Well, we saw last year when, another group had kind of spoiled, so to speak, the Ricky Wysocki news, that didn't go over well. And there is a relationship that we need to take with the players and the manufacturers.
Yeah.
That we hold dear. And we are, not only are we friends with a lot of these people, because again, you and I have been in the sport longer than I even want to say out loud, you know, we're in our 40s and we've been playing this since we were teens. So we know a lot of these people and we have personal relationships. You know, we'll go to dinner with them if we're at an event or something like that. I don't want to risk that. And I have a spot in the media, but my spot in the media doesn't necessarily mean I need to break that news. And as we know, there is value to these big announcements. We've said it before that I said it a couple weeks ago that if it were up to me, when that announcement drops, they better have plastic ready. And if I spoil that announcement, assuming it's a plastic sponsor, what it could be a rubber sponsor,
could be some hard seltzers.
Just saying. I mean, Simon is in Massachusetts.
Yeah,
I mean, he could be going to Vibram.
It could not be Simon.
It could be Eagle. Eagle could be moving to Massachusetts to work at Vibram. I don't know. I don't know anything. I truly don't. But what I'm saying is that by someone like us breaking that news early, it kind of could kill some of the momentum for those disc sales. And I don't want to be the responsibility of someone hurting somebody else's pocketbook if it comes down to that. It's just, there's no advantage to us. There is some advantage to having a little bit of, like you said, the exclusive news, maybe a little bit of clout chasing to say, oh yeah, you know, we're in the know, we know, our people know. It's just for any person, not just Simon, but you know, the Paul news, any Ricky news, any of the people that are possibly moving that have not even been talked about yet. Because I guarantee you there's going to be someone that moves that people are going to be like, oh wow. So it's just one of those things that I would rather. Now, any player that wants to come on our show and announce, we're here for you. We would be happy to promote that.
Certainly.
That.
Yeah. Which clearly comes with a different, you know, set of what you're trying to accomplish at that point in doing so. And we're happy to do so. So, all right.
Yes, Ray, we did talk about Thomas Gilbert to the airport TSA.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yes. Okay. All right. Is there any other news? Clearly, as we've been discussing at large, the announcements we're mostly hearing are people talking about their departures.
Or extensions.
Or a few extensions, but largely the departures. And as Missy and others have said, we're going to see more of those new, fresh announcements be made come the first of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's... There could be a couple of them, and that's the maybe the tidbit I'll throw in there to make it even spicier. Yeah. There could be a couple of pretty big names that are in the works.
I personally have heard of one or two. So,
and we could be referring to Cameron Messerschmidt, who has one of the biggest names in the sport.
I've always said when I'm doing graphics for any sort of video, I always use Cameron Messerschmidt's name as a template because it's the big. Yeah, it's a long name.
It is.
Or I would use my full name, Jonathan Van Derzen. But Cameron Messerschmidt, you got to go that, because if you can fit his name into a graphic,
then it fits everybody.
You're not going to worry about any other player on tour.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I've learned as well. Ace Run says we will have Deanne Carey on our podcast later this week. We may or may not try to get out of her. Yeah, and I'll admit again, because we're getting a little cloudy here. Was it both Deanne and her husband AJ? Was that since last week? Again, I read these, I process it for a second, and then come the next Tuesday. I don't even know if I think about it. Were they announced since last week? That Deanne Carey, I believe both Deanne Carey and AJ had mentioned that they are no longer going to be representing Innova and that they are moving on. So, yeah, it's almost impossible to remember week after week when we're here on a Tuesday night as to which ones have last stated that. So there's clearly been some shifting, and you can continue to throw, you know, or stoke the fire or throw other sticks or logs onto it when people have naturally said, oh, it feels like such and such team is losing just a ton of players, or I can't believe they let him go. And I'll spare you the soapbox entirely from last week, which is just always remember it has to work for the player, and it has to work for the manufacturer. Just because one is leaving doesn't mean that it's always going to be one party's fault. And I think you'd be surprised to how often whose fault or whose demand it really was as to how that party split. And I think that's one of the most unknown components of all the discussion talks, because a lot of people just assume one thing, and it's often not.
David Bayardo, I think I nailed your name there, said Lone Star Discs went from relatively unknown to having two huge signings this offseason. Is that going to happen more, you think? It's really funny because we, you know, MVP, plastics company before going into disc golf. Lone Star, same thing. Plastics company. They saw a space. Are there other plastics companies out there that have large contracts? Now, I believe Lone Star has contracts with some oil companies, and that's where a majority of the profits from their company come from. I don't think a majority of their profits come from disc golf. Are we going to see other plastics companies look at this, or injection molding companies look at this and go, hey, we could get into that. And, you know, what's $500,000 to us? You know, what's a half mil? You could spin up one of our machines that we already have. We could grab a player and four or five molds and let's go. Cause that's kind of how I feel like Lone Star did last year, the year before, whenever they kind of jumped onto the scene. And then had a few people on their team, Leah and Chandler. I'm sure they had others, but those were the two big names. And now suddenly, as we see, Emerson Keith, Nicola Castro, and ... probably a few more coming up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to see more of that, but it wouldn't shock me at all. It wouldn't shock me at all.
Okay, so stay tuned next week, or probably January 1st. I think you will likely wake up to or still be rip-roaring from the night before, whatever you're into. Come January 1st, I think we will see quite a few of the sponsorship news and announcements officially hit, or whenever they deem, you know, there is something to be said about maybe not being on January 1st, because if you want yours to have a little bit more breathing room and or stand out, you know, 12:01 on January 1st may not be
all ripped
time.
Up. Hey guys,
look at my new effing sponsor. They're great. I don't know
if I ever get to sign with DGA. I'm not planning on it. I'm going to at 12:01. I'm going to announce, and I'm going to have some photos that you and I have with Scott Kesey.
Oh, there are some good ones, folks. That will forever, which will ever constitute as some form of either blackmail or
we're definitely going to blackmail terms Scott for dismissal. Kesey someday. So don't sweat it, Scott.
All right. So, do we have any other PDGA news or information going on? Was it since last week that the Worlds was also announced?
No, the 2024 majors were announced, I believe.
Oh. Already last week?
Since last week.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We think we'd know these
because
things.
There was there's a lot of hubbub that the 2024 majors did not go to Europe, as was predicted, that a lot of people, they did. We know they put in a bid. UC had talked about it, but it did not go there. Instead, it's going to Lynchburg, Virginia. And that is, what is it? The Tech?
New London Tech Course,
and I believe another course that's being currently made. Yeah. It's a golf course style course, but there is a lot of push for that Lynchburg, and Nate Heineld will be running that. He's the TD on record, and a lot of people I saw online were upset that Heineld, who's on the board, blah blah blah, he recused himself from the vote. So for what it's worth, there's only a few. I think there's probably less than 10 tournament directors that I would trust running a Worlds right now that have truly proven that they can do it. And Heineld is clearly one of those 10. So we saw that. A couple other of the majors were announced, but that's really the big one. I mean, we know that Champions Cup is staying at WR Jackson. We know European Open, which I don't believe is going to have a 2024, is probably going to stay in Europe. That's where the European Open will probably stay. I don't think it's going to move around. And a couple of the other majors were announced.
I don't know. According to Missy Gannon, I think Uganda might be bidding for the European Open.
Well, I wish them the best of luck.
Okay.
So if it goes somewhere else, and we need to start with an E, because I don't want to change the abbreviation.
Yeah.
So EO, it could go, you know, anywhere.
Okay. Well,
Ecuador. The Ecuador Open is going to get the European Open. So then we're going to stick
Estonia.
With the EU. Estonia is still kind of still in Europe. So,
yeah.
That doesn't work, Tara. Anyway, let's wrap this show up, Tara. We'll get into an after show. We'll give away something and we'll answer a few more questions that are out on the board.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea to me. So, maybe for the final time, the regular show of our 2022 season, we have to thank you guys so much for joining us throughout this year. We've had some very long nights, some very short and abrupt and challenging nights. And we've had some just hopefully heartwarming and inspiring interviews, conversations. Sometimes we got a little testy, sometimes a little controversial, but when it was all said and done, it's been an incredible 2022, and we can't thank you guys enough for joining us, whether it's live or you've downloaded it because you're trucking across the United States, whatever the case might be, or any of our European friends or any other contingencies and countries across the globe. Thank you guys for joining us on our final night of 2022. Thank you to Missy Gannon for spreading the love of disc golf the way that she did, along with the Paul McBeth Foundation. We'll talk about some other great organizations in the after show, including the Ricky Wysocki Foundation that I just got some more details on. It's been awesome. So for Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. That's been podcast 435. We'll see you guys in a few minutes when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.